How has AI changed your workday? For many people, the answer right now will be, not too much. Maybe you've been playing around with ChatGPT or some of the other tools, and maybe you've even integrated it into some of your daily workflows, but from what I see, most of us are just scratching the surface of how AI could transform our businesses. So the aim of this episode of The Marketing Mix is to reassure you it's not too late to embark on your own AI journey and to give you some thought starters along the way. I'll talk through some of the options available, things like should you be using ChatGPT or Claude or maybe Gemini. I'll highlight some use cases that I think will be helpful to most people who are in a marketing or a leadership role, and I'll share some thoughts on where this goes next. Welcome to The Marketing Mix, where I talk to the smartest people I know in the world of business-to-business marketing and sales. We find out what makes these folks tick, how they stay ahead of the curve, and what trends they're keeping an eye on right now. I'm your host, Steve Cummins. I've built and run marketing teams at a number of tech companies, from Fortune 500 to fast-growth startups. And I found one of the best places to learn is from talking to people who are out there getting stuff done, people who are in the mix. Sam Altman, who is the CEO of OpenAI, has said that AI will do 95% of the tasks that marketers use agencies for, which is hyperbole, and I don't really believe it. At least I don't believe the 95% number. It will absolutely replace a lot of the current marketing tasks and make marketing tactics accessible to people and companies that don't have big marketing budgets, but it will also create opportunities. And I like to think that anyone who is smart enough to listen to The Marketing Mix is the kind of person that's going to be up to the challenge of taking advantage of those opportunities. I mentioned the Sam Altman quote because AI, like any new technology, can generate equal amounts of excitement and fear. And the easiest way to tap into the excitement and assuage the fear is to start to use it. So for anyone who asks me how to get started, my answer is something along the lines of, well, just get started. Which primarily means create a free account with ChatGPT and start playing around. But it can also mean just taking a closer look at the AI features in tools you already use, like Canva or Salesforce or your email app. But that's probably not enough advice to do more than just frustrate someone. So I want to give more specific ideas on how you might get more comfortable with using AI in your day-to-day workload. I'm going to walk through in this episode some of the initial things to consider when you're starting out, including looking at the pros and cons of the most popular models and which one you should use. I'll talk through three use cases for generative AI that most people can start to use immediately in their workflows, and I'll consider a little bit about where AI might go next. And I should say at this point, I believe there are really three camps in terms of how people are approaching AI. There's those who aren't really paying attention yet. There are those who have been playing around with it, and then there are those who are already using it in their day-to-day work, and I hope I'll provide something useful for each one of those camps during this episode. Before I dive in, a quick word on terminology. I find myself referring to the AI services, things like ChatGPT, in different ways. I'll call them bots, I'll call them AI assistants, AI tools. I refer to them as they and talk about them thinking, even though we know they don't. So it's not ideal. It clouds the issue a bit, but let's put that down, ironically, to me being an imprecise human and also our tendency to humanize machines. So go easy on me with some of the terminology I might be using. I will also talk about large language models or LLMs. These are the engines that the AI bots are built on. At this stage, you don't need to know much about them as you get started. For now, just think of it in the same way as the data that Google scrapes when you ask it a search query. When you type in that query in Google, you know it's going somewhere to get this information. You don't really care where it's going. It's important that it has it, but you don't really need to pay attention to it. And that's really what the large language models are in the cases that we're talking about here. Now, when you talk to people about AI, one of the first things somebody will bring up is this idea of hallucinations or effectively, you know, wrong answers, bad information. There's been some high-profile cases, you know, a lawyer who quoted case histories that didn't exist, some customer service chatbots that promised guarantees or features or services that weren't really being provided. And it's undoubtedly a concern, but I think as you start using AI tools, you can put that in perspective. You'll understand where that could happen, where it's not going to happen, and you'll understand how to combat it. One of the people I was paying attention to is John Udell. He's been using large language models and generative AI for much longer and more extensively than I have. And he writes about it frequently in his column in a publication called NewStack. And in a recent article, he talked about the 7 rules of working with LLMs, which, you know, let's think of it, 7 rules of working with AI bots. And I'll link to the article in the notes. It's worth taking a deeper look at. But John starts out, his number one rule is think out loud. So encouraging you to have an ongoing conversation with the bots and to keep asking and keep digging. And personally, I found this to be a key component of being successful with AI. It's not a one and done. You need to keep querying and keep talking and effectively think out loud. Number 2 on John's list is a very important one. Never trust, always verify. So this obviously taps into those horror stories of the hallucinations and non-existent references. And it's just a clear reminder that AI should be thought of as a resource. It is not a paragon of perfection. It is certainly not infallible. And then John ends his 7 rules with learn by doing. And that ties in nicely with really my key suggestion to people who aren't sure, which is get stuck in. The more you try, the more you'll learn, the less daunting it will seem. But I think John also includes it in here because he's aware, and we should all be aware, that these AI tools are constantly evolving, constantly changing. So you have to constantly be working with them to keep up with them. And that's also a part of this learn by doing. That's how you stay current. Okay, so let's assume you're ready to get started. Now then, which of these models should you use? ChatGPT is the obvious one. It's run by OpenAI. It's the main one people talk about. It was the first one that was released to the wild a year or so ago. So they led the charge, and I think arguably they're still ahead of the pack. But there are others out there. There's one called Claude, which is very popular, by a company called Anthropic. And then Google's tool, which currently is called Gemini, but Google have a track record of constantly switching their names. But for now, it's called Gemini. And there's a bunch of others as well that are often tuned for specific use cases. But I think for now, let's look at these 3, since that's where most people will start. There's a bunch of resources out there to help you choose. Just make sure, if you want to do your own research on this, that you are reading a recent article when you do go looking for help, because these models are constantly evolving and improving. So if you're being guided by something that's more than a month or so old, chances are it's out of date. One person to take a look at is a journalist called Timothy Lee, and he writes a newsletter called Understanding AI. And a recent edition of this newsletter was comparing the newest version of Claude with ChatGPT-4 and also the Gemini tool. And he ran a whole range of tests on them, much, much deeper than you or I would ever go into, to see what they're good at. I recommend you read the full article, but at a high level, there was 3 key takeaways. First is, different models are better at different things. So one example he gives, ChatGPT seems to be better at counting things. Claude is better at proofreading. And he includes some other examples in the article, but that just gives you a flavor of it. The second key thought out of this is that none of them are great at everything. Pushing further than that, he also has this suspicion that these tools are programmed to do well at certain standardized, let's say, benchmark tests, right? Even though this has only been a year or two out in the wild, there are standardized tests. So the developers can tune it to make sure they perform very well on there. But as soon as they move outside of those benchmarks, performance drops off. And then the third thing, he echoes John Udell's caution that I talked about earlier, which is that you must always verify the output that comes out of it. It's a good article. I'll put a link in the notes. And then another one, there's a newsletter on Substack called AI for Good. And it gives insight, I would say, from a power user on how he feels the 3 most popular tools compare. One thing I like about it, there's a table in there showing how they stack up on features, things like ability to submit attachments, analyze images, and so on. So that's another place to do some research. But if you're in the TLDR category, Too long, didn't read. I suggest you start with ChatGPT. Firstly, because the majority of online courses and resources and articles that you find will focus on ChatGPT. I also think it probably is still the most competent overall, although for certain applications it might not be the best. And let's be honest, we just want to get started, so let's pick the one that everybody's talking about. The free version is fine, I think, for now, at least to get started. But there are some features of the paid version that I personally find valuable. One of these, it gives you the ability to attach documents. So, for example, I could upload a transcript of this podcast. It will read it, and it will summarize the discussion for me. It also gives you access to DALL-E, which is OpenAI's image generation model. Honestly, I'm still struggling with this one a bit. This is one instance where I think a dedicated program like Adobe Firefly is much better. But DALL-E is a cool tool to play around with. I think it's also good if you're looking more for, let's say, fantasy type images than realistic images. So it's a nice advantage to the paid version. And then the paid version also has more up-to-date data and can access the internet. The free version of ChatGPT cuts off around about January 2022. That's the extent of its training data. But in certain applications, you might want to have more current data. As an example, this morning, just to test it out, I asked it a question about results of my favorite football or soccer team, Liverpool. So in the free version of ChatGPT, it gave me answers from 2 years ago. In the paid version, it gave me the correct score from a game that happened this weekend. So using that example, if you are writing a sports article where you need the latest scores and stats, you're going to need the paid version. Or if it's a more of research type tasks, again, you may want to have access to the up-to-date information and you need the paid version for that. So let's assume you sign up for ChatGPT. What exactly can you use it for? You know, unless you have a real use case, it's just going to be a toy and you're going to lose interest with it pretty quickly. So let's think about how it can improve productivity or how it can just make the workday a bit easier. There's three key tasks that I think are great applications for ChatGPT that anybody could find a use for. First of these is a writing companion, particularly in marketing. I would say that's probably the number one use case that I hear people talk about. Secondly, I use it for summarizing material. And a third area is as a customized search engine, basically a replacement for certain types of Google searches. And I'll talk through each one of those. Let's start with the writing companion. If you have to write a new blog or a new article and you're struggling for ideas, you know, you're effectively staring at a blank page, why not start a conversation with ChatGPT? You could ask it to give you ideas for an article on your industry, or prompt it to give you 10 headlines or 10 thought starters. Maybe you already have an idea for the article, but you're not sure where to start. So you can give it a subject or a couple of bullet points. You could ask it to write a 3-paragraph summary, and then you use that as a thought starter or as a basis for it. So it sort of unblocks that writer's block. Maybe you've already written the article and you want to polish it up. So you could ask GPT to act as a copy editor and suggest improvements to the article. You could ask it to summarize the main points, and that'll give you a sanity check that it's achieved the goals you had in mind. There's plenty of LinkedIn posts around this, so I won't belabor it, but I think a writing assistant is a really good way to start out. Another use case is as a summarization tool. Somebody sends you a 50-page PDF, which maybe you would really love to read, but you just know in reality you won't find time to do it. You can upload it to GPT and ask it to summarize it for you. You can ask it to, you know, pull out the key takeaways, pull out direct quotes. You can even ask it questions based on the content of that article. I personally use this when someone is pitching to be a guest on this podcast, and they will often send me a book or an ebook, you know, that expresses their ideas, and they send that over to me to highlight their expertise. And so as a first pass, I will ask ChatGPT to summarize it. And then if I like the summary, then I will go and invest the time to read that original content. And then there's the search tool use case. And I'll give you an example here rather than talk around the subject. So let's say you're running your first big trade show event and you want to get an idea of all the individual tasks that are going to be involved so that you don't miss anything and so you can plan for it. In the past, you would probably do a Google search, which would give you a bunch of links that you would then have to click through. You would have to read all of those pages. And let's be honest, a lot of those links go to self-serving blog articles written by trade show vendors. And on top of that, they get to be very repetitive. So instead, you can ask ChatGPT to provide a list of the key activities to prepare for a trade show. And it will go off, it will do that research for you, and it will provide you a list of recommendations. And most of those recommendations will have a link out to the original resource if you do want to dig in further. Or you can ask it to break out one of its recommendations into more detailed activities within it. And then once you're happy with that list of recommendations, you could ask it to create an Excel spreadsheet of key activities and dates, and then that can form the basis of your workflow, or you can even upload it into, you know, your project management tool like Asana or whatever it may be. So it's a great way of doing sort of that first level research into task. And it's funny because, you know, I go back to the Sam Altman quote of it replaces 95% of what you have an agency to do. I guess one alternative in the past would have been to hire somebody to come in and run this event for you. And here's a fun extension of it. So let's say that trade show is in Chicago. You're going to take a client out for dinner. Why not ask ChatGPT to recommend a few steakhouses within a set budget and that's no more than a mile away from the convention center? It will give you a list of probably three or four suggestions. As with everything else, verify. I wouldn't take its suggestion verbatim, but it's probably a better starting point than OpenTable or Google, and then you can go look at those restaurants and make your own decision. Now look, the reality is when you first start playing with this, you will get frustrated. The answers will be vague. They won't really give you the information you need. So you need to get better at writing the prompts to get that information out. So let me give you a couple of tips on it. And again, there are a lot of people out there, particularly on social media, telling you how to prompt it. And I don't think there's necessarily a right or a wrong way, but there are some ideas. So first off, I would say give it a role. So in the case of the trade show research, I'd start by saying something like, acting as an event marketer, please provide a summary of. So you've given it some context and you're effectively narrowing down the output because it's now understanding the arena in which you're playing. And then the next part of it is to treat these queries as a conversation. I think when you start out, you just assume you can put in a request and it'll come back with the right answer. Think of it more like talking to somebody at a networking event or in a business meeting. You know, typically you won't get far with your first question to them. You'll get a shallow answer. But as you ask more questions, you get into the subject deeper, you provide more context, you get more interesting answers. ChatGPT is the same. The more you interact, the more context it has. And the better the answers will be, or the more useful the answers will be. So when that first answer comes back, you know, don't give up. Ask for more details, ask for clarification, tell it why it wasn't the right answer, or give it some direction. I find style tips are always useful. Say things like using a conversational tone or write in the third person. One thing I find often is that it can be pretty verbose and use a lot of flowery language. So I will add to the prompt, use short words and short sentences. That tends to get it past that problem. My main point here is, look, this takes time. It takes iteration. Just like anything else, it takes practice. So I really encourage you, just play around with ChatGPT. I think it truly can help with productivity. But I think the most important reason, or one of the most important reasons to play around with it, it will start to give you a sense of the potential of AI, so you won't feel left behind. So that's where we are today, but where is it going? Well, firstly, as much as we're all talking about how to prompt the AI bots, and you see these discussions about how companies need to hire prompt engineers, the reality is that's all a short-term issue. As this evolves, I think very few of us will be talking directly to AI models. The value is going to come from the apps that are built on top of them. You know, I said earlier, starting out with AI, for a lot of people, could just mean playing with the AI features in tools you already use. And that's probably where things are going to go. AI's biggest benefit, I think, for most of us will be in making our tools more intelligent and more useful. So that's definitely something to bear in mind. What we think about AI in business now is completely different to a year ago. In fact, a year ago, most of us were only just starting to think about it. So you can bet that AI, particularly in terms of real-world applications for business, will also be unrecognizable a year from now. When I want to dig deeper and think a little bit harder about AI, one of my go-to people is Ethan Mollick. He's a professor at Wharton, and he's doing some serious thinking around the potential and the pitfalls of AI. I often share his material on LinkedIn, but I think it's worth signing up for his newsletter directly. It's called One Useful Thing. I'll put a link in the show notes for it. Another thought about this and where it's going to go. So premium or paid services are definitely starting to gain momentum. All of the AI models have a paid version. Strangely, they all seem to be $20 a month. But much of the money around the AI is going to come from this need or this desire to sign up for premium tiers of your existing tools. The software companies, the SaaS companies, will use this as a way to upgrade you from a free tier to a paid tier or from your existing subscription to a higher subscription to be able to access their AI features. And that's obviously a great business case for these SaaS companies. We may get frustrated because, I don't know about you, but I'm already frustrated how many subscriptions I have to pay for. So I think the reality is it's not going to be a smooth road. I'll give you an example. You know, Microsoft is starting to run into some headwinds. They've introduced a corporate version of their Copilot offering. It costs $30 per month per user. And there's an interesting article in the Register, and they quoted via Wall Street Journal, the Juniper Network CIO saying, "I wouldn't say we're ready to spend $30 per user for every user in the company." Now, that's a problem because a huge company like Juniper Networks is obviously a target customer for Microsoft. In that same article, you know, a Microsoft spokesman is basically saying, look, there's value. We absolutely see the value already in email and Teams products, but there's an acceptance there that Copilot isn't really ready for things like Excel and PowerPoint, which I can imagine is where corporate folks really think it's going to be able to help them. So all this means to me is that in some cases, expectations have really run ahead of the development curve. So my friend Marcio Sato, who is currently at Google, he would always come back to me when we would get in discussions about tech trends. He would always talk about the Gartner hype cycle. And I don't think it applies to AI in general because it's such a broad category, but it will for sure apply to certain areas and applications of AI. And I think this may be an example of that. So if you're familiar with the hype cycle, be prepared to enter the trough of disillusionment for some of these tools and services, because they have been rolled out very quickly and probably ahead of the capabilities as they exist. And what, you know, what I mean here is don't write off things like Copilot. Microsoft have the time and resources to make it successful, but don't fall into that trap of expecting it to be, you know, this perfect tool and this overnight success. Well, I've covered more ground than I expected to when I first decided to talk about AI on today's podcast. And in the notes, I'll link to some of these resources and newsletters I've mentioned here so you can continue your exploration. I should add a disclaimer here since we've been talking about AI. I have not used AI to generate anything in this discussion. This is all stuff that's been rattling around in my head. But it raises another question. Will we get into a world where people include disclaimers? Or will it start to look like using Excel or using a calculator? Nobody ever says, oh, I used Excel to do this work. I think that's another interesting debate. So I may not have used AI to generate anything here, but I have been experimenting with ChatGPT specifically to help me with the production tasks around the podcast because it can be very time consuming. One feature I didn't mention that comes with the paid version is the ability to build your own AI bot. They call it a custom GPT. And you can effectively train it or build it focused on a particular task or a particular style. So I'm creating one that will hopefully help me streamline the production workflow of the podcast. Things like, you know, generating show notes, chapters, some of the editing tasks, that kind of thing. More on that another time. The reason I bring it up here, though, it leads me to the drink of the week, as I always like to end my podcast. since I don't have a guest this time, I would normally ask the guest what their favorite drink is. So I thought, well, let me go find a custom GPT to have a conversation with. And somebody has created a custom GPT, a custom bot called Forget About It Cocktails, which is there to help you recommend a drink. The bot talks like a cross between Al Capone and Tony Soprano. And after a short but very bizarre conversation, it offered me a drink called the Mobster's Mirage, which is a mix of whiskey, Cointreau, and dark rum. I will put the recipe in the show notes. I will be trying one this weekend, so let's see how it goes. In the meantime, good luck with your AI journey. Feel free to ping me with any questions, or if you just want to continue the discussion here. And no doubt it is a subject we'll keep coming back to over future episodes. Thanks for listening to The Marketing Mix. If you have suggestions or would like to be a guest on the show, visit our website at themarketingmixpodcast.com. In my consulting practice, I help founder-led companies and small businesses punch above their weight, providing the marketing strategy and know-how needed to take your company to the next level. More details are at solentstrategies.com. See you next time on The Marketing Mix.